AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Yep, yep, Ghetto Boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded. The disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it. Cause we wrote it, the north, south, the east coast. It's the GB knocking, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violins, the system is so corrupt. They throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB. Don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Ghetto Boys in the house. Back with another episode of information and instructions to help you navigate through this wild, crazy, beautiful world. In the studio, Jason Mitchell.
Yes, sir. Yes,
What's
sir.
What's up, King?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Hey, man. Shit. One more hop, I'll be on top.
I heard that, man. Thank you for having me, big brother. Thank you for having
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. We got to get right into it.
Yeah.
You have portrayed a number of complex characters in films like Straight Outta Compton and Mudbound.
Yeah.
In Mudbound, you played a character that was based on this guy who was, you know, coming home from post-World War II.
Right.
And you got this racial tension going on. How is it that you were able to, like, channel that energy that was needed to where you coming home, basically damn near war hero, coming back home to Mississippi?
Right.
You know, one of the racist, I mean, this is like damn near like the foundation of racism in America.
Right. Facts.
Like, how were you able to to channel that energy?
Well,
to deliver that role.
I mean, to be honest, right? Like, just being a black man in America, we know they got racism that just lies on the surface, especially when you grow up in the South. Like me, I'm originally from New Orleans, right?
Right.
But my grandfather, he's from Bush, Louisiana, and went to the Korean War, came home with, probably like a fourth or fifth grade education, and had to marry my grandmother, which they consider passé blanc. I don't know if you ever seen this movie, The Passing, that Tessa Thompson just did, this black and white film.
I haven't seen
it. Yeah, it was an excellent film, but it was like real, right? So my grandmother was what they called passé blanc, passed for white. And her and my grandfather pretty much got together because he had some money from the war, and she was white enough to go start them a business, you know? So it was damn near really his story. And like where we actually shot the film, when I was in the fourth and fifth grade, man, we took field trips out there to see, you know, the plantations and the wax museums and all of that. So it was something that was already kind of deep rooted in me that I felt like I just needed to let out. And it was such a privilege to be able to let that out. You know what I mean? Like, I just appreciate D. Reed so much for talking about that, because a lot of times people want to jump straight from slavery to civil rights, and they never want to talk about this Jim Crow situation that was happening that really, I feel like, built the hate, you know what I mean, between white and black people. And it was, man, funny story about that, right? Like, I took my grandfather to see Straight Outta Compton, and he fell asleep in the middle of the movie, just was knocked out. You know what I mean?
Tired.
Exactly. He was tired.
That,
you know,
was not, it had nothing to do with the movie. He
right,
was just tired.
Right. But when I took him to go see Mudbound, he literally sat there with his arms folded the entire time. Now, mind you, his oldest brother was a slave. You know what I mean? And in his mind, it's always some work to be done, even on a Sunday. You know what I mean? He always tell me, it's always some work. And he sat there with his arms folded the entire time, and when we left out of there, he was like, so you mean to tell me that these people paid you to do this? That's what you're saying? Like, he couldn't even conceptualize the fact that I had got money put in my pocket, and I'm getting glorified for putting this on TV. He couldn't even, his brain couldn't even compute it. You know what I mean? And I just look at it.
Was he upset? Was he upset about it?
Absolutely. Because, I mean, to him, it was way too real. You know, because the exact same thing happened to him and a few of his brothers. They went to the war, came back, and even though they was heroes, they wasn't getting no love from the white folks, and they wouldn't save them. You know what I mean? So they really, they had a whole different type of feeling about the film just in general, you know? And it took other people to tell them, oh, like, he getting awards and, you know, the movie is doing so good for him to even calm down. Like, he wasn't even trying to hear that at first, you know what I mean? And it was just...
So he felt that your character was blasphemy.
Well, he thought, because in his mind, right, acting is already kind of a joke. Like, they're not paying no black man to be no actor. Like, that's never gonna happen. You know, because back in their day, it was like, if you was acting for them white people, you was basically a joke. Like, you know, black people wasn't respecting it. You know, so he already was kind of like looking at my job like, when you gonna get a real job? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like, he never believed me. It always took everybody else to tell him, like, oh, you know, your grandson doing great. But yeah, he never looked at my job like it was a real thing. So when he saw that, it was like, but for me, I feel like, look what we did in three generations. You know what I mean? We basically went from his oldest brother, who was a slave. I mean, he put my mama and her two siblings in LSU because all they could do was pick up trash at LSU. But think about it, like, you go to a war and then you come home and all you could do is pick up trash on LSU campus? That's crazy. So he sent all his kids there, you know, just like to be able to stand firm on what he believed. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my mama had me, and then I put that story on the big screen. You know what I mean? And we went for a few Oscars. So, yeah, I feel like that's when I realized as an actor, like, what I did really meant something. You know what I mean? Like, when I played Eazy-E, I knew, like, I just couldn't. You just can't fuck that up. You know what I mean? Like, if you do, you just got to hide under a rock until it blow over. But when you start, like, you know, when your children come home and they like, "Daddy, we watched your movie at school today," that's life changing. You know what I mean? So, you know, I hate to look at myself like an actor activist or something like that, because I ain't got a racist bone in my body. But, you know, it feel good to be able to tell our story and not have to be violent with our protests. You know what I mean? So I feel like we came a long way.
But how do you go from Eazy-E, the tough guy, Eazy-E ain't scared of nothing, mm-hmm. to Ronzell Jackson?
Yeah.
You know, this guy who is a war hero and he got a chip on his shoulder, but damn, he got to deal with these motherfuckers.
Right.
In Mississippi. I mean, they're a different type of uncivilized mutt.
Right.
You know, and they got the law enforcement and the courts and the government, everything, everybody all in cahoots, everybody on the same page. Like,
right.
You're nobody and you're dealing with a system. You're not dealing with a person. You're dealing with a system.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, you know, as sad as it is, like, we still really haven't wiggled our way outside that system all the way, you know, as blacks, like, because they have this cookie-cutter version of what it should be. With all due respect, let's just take Hollywood, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. It was built by a certain group of people, and, you know, a lot of the talent is black talent, or it may be, you know, people of color or whatever it may be. But if you're not coloring inside the lines, they can move you around real quick. And it's the same thing with the sharecropping situation. It's like, you free, but you live on my land. So in order to have anything that mean anything, you got to work for me. And that's just how this system was built. And it's sad to see, you know, but me and a few of my brothers like yourself, you know, we wiggling our way out of this. You know what I mean? And it's about ownership and it's about having something for yourself. So, you know, if anybody learns anything from me in my career, that's what I want them to go home with. You know, go home with something that's for you and that's going to be for your family. You know what I mean? You gotta own something in this world. For sure. You know? And it's pretty crazy, though, to have this this freedom to be able to express myself the way I feel like I need to, because it's tough. It's hard out here. You know what I mean? You got the police on your back. You got all of this systemic racism, all of these different things happening, you know? So I think I was very blessed to be in a situation to be able to speak for an entire demographic of people, you know? So I really got to get a glory to God, man. Cause yeah. When you ask how, I don't really know, man. It's a blessing. You know, that's where the gift kick in and my own understanding moves out the way.
Yeah. You talked about the role you played in Straight Outta Compton, mm-hmm. Eazy, the iconic Eazy-E, Eric Wright, the man, the guy, above all, right? That was your breakout role.
Yep.
That was... Congrats, you know.
Thank you.
Congrats and salute, because when I looked at you do that, in fact, all you guys nailed your roles. Y'all was just perfect. The casting was perfect.
Yeah, we got to give a big shout out to Vicky Thomas for that.
Yeah,
right?
She, Vicky Thomas, man. Yeah. She get that. That the casting was perfect. One thou believable.
Right.
And the way you were able to channel your energy, it was like a roller coaster. You know, it's like a roller coaster type thing going on. But you were able to deliver it and it was believable every step of the way. There were no hiccups.
Right, right.
Like, how were you able to channel this iconic character and maintain, you know, like, you know, you're acting, but, mm-hmm. you know, you're going cut, cut, go, cut, cut, mm-hmm. and still be able to deliver, like, time and time and time again? Because I know the movie only lasted an hour and something.
Right, right, right.
But I know, you know, it took a lot of takes to get it right, to get it perfect.
Oh, absolutely. F. Gary Gray, you know, we also got to give a shout out to him. You know, that's our fearless leader. And as a black director, I mean, he ain't ever missed. You know what I mean? Like his first film, Friday, when you look at Set It Off, The Italian Job,
True
The Negotiator. I mean, he just don't miss, you know? So we definitely got to put him properly on the plateau that he should be on. And, you know, he's definitely one of the greats. He might be the highest paid black, you know, director ever. So he grew up around the corner from Cube. You know what I mean? And he knew this life very well. But for me, you know, being from New Orleans, all I know is the lingo, right? Because I'm seeing it on TV. I'm seeing Menace to Society, you know, these sorts of movies. And I'm able to do the voice real quick, cuz, and I could switch it up and do the L.A. voice. And, you know, I could do all of that. And it was like something that we always thought was funny in New Orleans, because, you know, I don't really know exactly what language we speak, because it's not quite English, you know, but, like, it was funny to us that they would pronounce every syllable, even though they were super gangster. And, you know, and it was things that I saw on TV that, like, once I got to L.A. and I met guys like Nipsey and Problem and Laylaw and all of them, when they started to explain the gang culture to me, a lot of it started to make more sense. Like, when people see Easy move a certain way, it's like all of these things was like Crip affiliated situations, right? So I just started looking at it like, you know what, if I could build this man from the ground up and humanize him as a person, you know, from, you know, him growing up, like having their first little studio in his grandmother's garage, to, you know, going through baby mama drama, to, you know, his cousin being killed and being one of the biggest drug dealers ever. I was just sort of putting all these pieces together that would allow me ultimately to be so prepared that by the time I got on set, I was taking direction as Eazy-E and not as Jason Mitchell. You dig that? So that's kind of that's how locked in I was. And man, we like working with Gary was crazy, right? Because for 4 straight weeks, we had to like re-record the album. We had to do all kind of like performance training and stuff like that with Dub C. And they wanted to believe that we was in WA.
Shout out
to
Dub C.
Yeah, that's my guy. He's a super solid one. You know what I mean?
Super talented.
Yeah. He's amazing. But they wanted us to convince NWA that we was NWA without the costumes.
Right.
So, you know, it was about being able to listen to each other and really be able to transfer the energy and all of these different things that, like, at first, we all really kind of thought some bullshit. He like, man, this nigga, bro, he just doing the most. So one day he pulls some money out of his pocket and he said, everybody close your eyes. And he drops a bill on the ground. And he said, what kind of bill is that? And we like, come on, bro. Like, you just making up anything now. He like, no, if you really listening and you really paying attention, you wouldn't know what kind of bill that hits the ground. If it's $100, $5, $1 bill, $20, $10, you going to know if you really paying attention. Man, listen. By the end of that training, he had us do it again. He dropped that. Everybody was like, that's $100. That's $100. We looked down, it was $100 bill. And it was just incredible to like work with him and get that real camaraderie going. You know what I mean? We was really like brothers. Like when we was doing all that crying at the end of the movie, it became a joke to us because we was like, this nigga really about to make me cry. Like when Aldis Hodge walked out of there to play MC Ren, he was really holding them tears back. When Neil ran out of there crying, he was really, he was in the hallway really bawling off camera. You know what I mean? Because we grew such a brotherhood that it was like, it felt too real. It felt too real to us. You know what I mean? It was wild.
I just don't know of a way that they could have gotten a better cast out of that. I just don't know. Like, it was so perfectly casted. Typically, you can get one person, the lead person, you can find somebody that can really, really embody the role of that character. They can do it for that one person.
Right, but to have everybody is a different thing.
What, 5 different
people? Like, man, and even down to like the Jimmy Iovine,
even that, yeah,
little roles that they popped in that you like, damn. Yeah. Like when I first met Jimmy, I was so impressed to see him standing next to the guy that was playing him. It blew my mind. Yeah. I'm like, damn, they finding everybody that really looked like the people. Jerry but they still Heller had the chops too.
Jerry Heller also.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul, he was amazing to work with, bro. He changed my whole mind frame on where I was on the totem pole. You know what I mean? Because I didn't know no actors growing up. Like, the actors that are from New Orleans, they had to leave New Orleans in order to, you know, flourish. They had to, you know, go to New York or L.A. or whatever it was. So I grew up around all rappers. You know what I mean? I come up under Lil Wayne and, you know what I mean, the Squad and all of these guys. That's who I'm seeing coming up.
Did you try to rap?
I rapped before. Everybody thought I was going to rap. You know what I mean? Okay. And not act. But I was just like, you know what? Ain't nobody acting. So once I found that little hustle, I was like, hey, I might be good at this. You know? So
but
I ended
gonna
up.
Rap, though. You're going to rap. You gonna put it? You gotta put it. It's in your, it's calling you, bro.
It definitely is. I ain't gonna lie. I got a couple of records on suck, you know. Cause I ain't gonna lie. I could write any kind of music. I could write country music if I really wanted to. Me and Trevor Jackson, who I did Superfly with, we write a lot of music together.
Yeah,
that's my guy.
Man, that's something else. You can write country music?
I can. I'm here for it. Cause I mean, I'm a storyteller at the end of the day.
I bet you can't do that opera.
Opera, you know what? That might be a little out of my jacket. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's not necessarily something I enjoy. Like, the art is beautiful. I just saw a black opera singer like a couple of months ago, and I was just like, wow, it's incredible. But I'm...
Did you cry?
I didn't.
You're supposed to cry. When you listen to opera, you got to cry so they know you know what you're listening
That's
to.
That's what make it feel good?
Yeah, it's all about crying, bro. Like, if you don't cry, you really don't understand opera. Like, I'm supposed to go to my first opera event in a few days, and, you know...
You got to record yourself crying.
Yeah, I'm going to cry, bro.
I got to see. I want to see the process.
I got some tears for him, bro. Like, I'm going to do this little cry thing, man. You know? Yeah. But if you can't cry, though, you're not really an actor.
Oh, I could. Listen.
You got to be able to cry to be a real
actor. We can cry right now.
Do it. Right now.
Right now?
Right now.
All right, let me see. So you gonna take me there and I ain't gonna be able to come back, Willie. Don't do it. You see, you was already locked in.
You about to do it though. I was,
but it's not the easiest place to come back from.
Yeah.
You know? It's not the easiest place.
Yeah, you was about to do that, boy. I felt it though, didn't you? Yeah. I saw that little.
Yeah, you can see the Wellington.
I saw it building up. That was quick. Damn.
Yeah, man. It's crazy because like, you know, as a youngster, I would always entertain myself and entertain my friends, but I never thought that meant anything, you know? And all the hardships that I really had in my life, I didn't cry about them then, you know? Like, I lost my dad when I was 15. He ended up killing himself. You know, like, we experienced a lot of trauma in New Orleans. Yeah, just, you know, my friends dying and all of this. And it's like, you get so immune to the shock of it. That you don't never really take the time to cry. So I think when I did start figuring out that was something I could tap into and let loose on it, that it became like a therapy for me, right? Like, me and F. Gary Gray, I'll never forget, we doing the Detroit scenes and, you know, these big concert scenes, it's like high energy, all of that. You know, we laughing and, you know, I'm going back to my trailer for my lunch and he comes to my trailer and he's like, yeah, these hospital scenes, you know, they're coming up next week, and I just want to know what you're going to do. And I'm like, well, you know, besides what's on the script, you know what I mean? I'm going to bring the rain. I'm definitely going to cry, you know what I mean? Like, it's a process, you know what I mean? Because, you know, they didn't even think heterosexual men could get AIDS at that time, you know? So I told him about the discovery I was going to have, and, you know, then I'm going to cry. And he was like, well, I want you to do it right now. And I was like, no, like, I'm having a great day. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't want to do this right now. Like, what do you mean? He was like, we really had a hot and heavy argument in my trailer because I didn't want to show him, you know, what I was going to do. But then on the day, I'm talking about take one. That's what you're seeing on the movie because it just was coming down. And he just was in there hugging me. And I was like, I told you, bro, that I was going to be able to get there. But getting back ain't the easiest thing in the world because they got so much to cry for that we hold back sometimes. And they got so much pain inside of us that, like, if it's not channeled properly, you know, it could pop out and go the wrong way. So I'm glad that I do have this safe place to be able to come and let them tears out like it ain't nothing.
What's the process getting there and what's the process getting back?
The process getting there, I think, you know, they teach you like in these acting classes to use these breathing techniques. And, you know, after, like, different therapy and stuff that I've been through, I realized that, like, when you are alone with your thoughts and you try to breathe through it, right, a lot of times you can't help the way your body starts to feel. You know what I mean? So I just, I built this muscle memory to not fight it. You know what I'm saying? Once it starts to come, let it go. You know, but getting back, I mean, like, you know, this film that's about to come out now.
Everything
is both. You know, I had a tough scene where, you know, I had to let the tears out, but like, it really pretty much just took everybody coming and put their arms around me. You know what I mean? And that's what you need. You need that family love, you know? So we have that moment. We had that guy love situation, and then it's over. Now, you know? Sometimes you need that.
Now, did the director, Jaquavis Coleman, did he hug you?
He did. But, yeah, you know how people give you the tough hug? You good, yeah, man? You good? Yeah. Great job, man. But you good? And it's like, because it's, you know, like a lot of times when people see you go there that fast, yeah, and then they're like, all right, well, we're going to do a couple of more of these, and you turning it on and turning it off, it's like, you know, it's crazy. But you know how, like, when you're young and you get a whooping and you cry yourself to sleep, mm-hmm, and you wake up feeling like a lot better? A lot of times that's how it is. You know, it might feel a little fucked up while you're doing it and going through it, but afterwards you feel like the best. That's why, to me, it's definitely like a therapy thing for me.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast will be right back after the break.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, Drew Scott here. And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How did you and Jaquavis meet?
Man, me and Jaquavis met... He ended up reaching out to me just like, I think he might have just ran across my page or something like that. But I was like, at the time, COVID had just hit. I was living in New York. And my life was kind of like, you know, it was just a little bit slow for everybody. Like, you locked in the house, can't really do nothing, whatever. So he was like, I'm going to send you some books, you know, but like... you know how it is. Everybody being a hood books. Nigga sometimes. Yeah. Niggas say books and you be like, damn, I ain't gonna, you know, all right, send me your books. You know what I mean? So it was all good. But he sent me the books and I had nothing else to do. So I started reading. But then I ain't put the books down. I'm like, damn, this nigga cold. You know what I mean? So I'm just checking his books out like, damn, he could, you know, he really dope. So through that, we just built a friendship, you know what I mean? And we just would always just talk and just always be on the phone. And we just, you know what I mean? We just joked COVID together pretty much, like, you know. And we started talking about maybe, you know, how we could turn one of the books into a movie. And one thing just sort of led to another. And he was like, man, listen, you know, I believe in you. If you believe in me, let's do a movie. So I'm like, all right. And one thing just led to another, and we ended up doing a movie. And
did you know he was a New York bestseller before he reached out?
I didn't. I mean, I had heard of his books before. Okay. You know, I heard of his books. Because, you know, they real popular in the black community, him and his wife. But I wasn't a big reader. You know, I would read scripts and stuff. But, you know, like a lot of other black children, I just wasn't a big reader.
When you would read scripts, did you just read your own parts or you read the whole script?
No, I always read the whole script. Everybody know, when I come on set, like, I know my lines. I know your lines. Because, I mean, I feel like you find, because I love movies. You know what I mean? And a lot of times you got these little breadcrumbs and these little gems that happen. And this is how you know good writing. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people think that I got where I am in my career from the yeses, but it was really the noes. It was all the shit that I turned down. There was so many scripts that I get sent that, like, I'm looking for key things in it to know, like, if this going to be a good film or not. You know what I mean?
What are you looking for? Because that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Like, what do you look for? Because you actually pick some of the best roles. Yeah. Like, memorable characters. Characters that have to dive deep.
Yeah.
And pull out those emotions.
Yeah.
And you're consistent with that.
Well, I'm looking for the human pieces of it, man. A lot of times we just see stuff that's like on the surface, right? Like, I mean, I don't wanna give no examples because I don't wanna say, oh, this is bad acting or bad movies. But we see it all the time, you know? And me, I need layers to a man, right? Like, just using Eazy-E for example. He was the villain that everybody hated to hate, right? Because he did a lot of dumb shit and everybody was still rooting for him at the end. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted Eazy to die. He about to get his shit together. But right. In real life, he was definitely the villain. He was the bad guy in the movie, you know?
And he liked being the bad guy.
Yeah, he didn't have no problem with it. Because in his mind, he's thinking... Cube, you 17 years old. Your opinion really don't count. You ain't got no money. Dre, you got talent, but you ain't got no money. You know what I'm saying? Still, I'm out here risking my life for my money. So y'all ain't my friends. Like, this is a business transaction. So at the end of the day, without no money, all of these fantasies that y'all have about being superstars and all of this good stuff is out the window. You know, and at the time, they really was just thinking about being hood stars. Eazy was thinking bigger than them. So for him, he was the mastermind and the money behind it. So how do you go to somebody and tell them, I deserve XYZ that they ain't never seen? You know what I mean? Like, these guys went viral when it was just hand-to-hand situations. So every character that I try to find has layers. Rather they be good, bad, ugly, but they got layers of a man, and they need to be able to show that. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm one of them people who I really believe, like, I mean, you could feel when people got an ugly energy about themselves, right? Or some kind of demonic energy about themselves. But for the most part, I don't really believe in good people and bad people. I think it's just people, and there's decisions on the table, you know? And, like, all of us have made a bad decision here or there in our life, or, you know, made somebody feel a certain way, you know? Like, everybody ain't gonna love you. Everybody ain't gonna love your opinions. And I think that's what humanizes roles and humanizes movies the most. You know, just being able to show them different layers. I'm a 17-layer cake, so I need to be able to show people, you know.
You say everybody, you don't believe in good and bad people, just people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah!
What you saying on that, Willie?
I think there's some demonic-ass people out there.
Yeah. Hey,
do you think that somebody like, let's say, Dylann Roof, who shot up the black people at the church, you don't think he was a bad person? You think he's just a person?
Well, you know, I'm also people? Like, I ain't gonna say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I do believe that agendas be pushed a lot of times in situations. And, like, children are so easily influenced. Like, they do have a lot of demonic energies out here, right? But do I believe that that kid was born hating black people and said to himself, soon as I get a chance, I'm gonna shoot up a black church? Absolutely not. Now, whatever took over his mind at the time to make him go do that foolishness is a whole different story. You know, because, like, I don't know the dude's name, the other white boy who shot up the grocery store and was only killing black people. Mm-hmm. Remember, and he ran up on a white person, was like, oh, I'm sorry, went to the next person. But the first guy that he killed, the security guard who was at the door, invented the engine that ran off water and was just on the news like 2 weeks before that. They ain't trying to have that. So they going to shoot him and then make it look like a random ass mass shooting. You know what I mean? So now when I'm starting to see these shootings, it's getting more and more popular and a little bit crazy now. And I feel like it's an agenda to cover up what's really happening behind whoever they out there looking for at the time.
Well, I heard that theory. I heard that there were people saying that, you know, this happened because this guy, this black guy, invented a car that could run off water, and they can't let that happen. And we know that those things do happen. We know that they do try to silence black people,
right?
Who have ideas and information that can change the world,
right?
Because they don't want to encourage black kids to think bigger,
right? And then on top of that, you know, it's like if they give the cure to AIDS, all the people who've been studying AIDS, making $80,000-$90,000 a year studying AIDS, now don't have a job that exists anymore, you know? So they're going to pluck you.
But here's my gripe with that theory.
I love this.
They don't have to kill so many people just to kill this one guy. Like, keep in mind, the rest of us didn't even know about this invention until after the dude got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So if they just wanted to kill that guy, I mean, why not just get, you know, one guy to run up on him? Oh, how about this? Some guy try to act like he's stealing some out of the store.
Mm-hmm.
He accosts the guy blows his brains out. Nobody questions anything. They know how to kill. They know how to kill and set it up to make it look like that was some type of disagreement. Like, especially when it comes to black people, they'll immediately try to make it like a hood situation.
Right.
Like somebody just got out of pocket.
Right.
They know how to do that. Why kill so many people?
Well, I think historically, black people have never thrived well in chaos because we're so passionate. And the first thing we do when we really believe some shit is tear our own shit up. You know what I mean? We've been our worst enemy for a long time, in my opinion. You know, so the first thing they want to do is hand us chaos and say, yeah, get mad. Y'all get mad. Everybody get mad. Because then we completely forget about what's really happening in the situation. Because this is how I look at it, right? Like, I know a few police, and they wanted to be cops their entire life. They waiting on opportunities to do some heroic shit. What in any cop right mind after all of these people been shot up that your approach to this person who just did all of this killing is so sweet? You taking these people to get burgers and you're putting bulletproof vests on them and you know what I mean? Like, with black people, it's not like that. Police is beating you up, they killing you, they shooting you. So to me, that was really what I'm looking at. Like, wait, they ain't, why didn't you just take this opportunity to kill this dude? They just had a mass shooting out here in Texas. He was a brown guy, you know, some kind of Hispanic. Guess what? When it was all said and done, he was laid out. He was on the ground. He was finished. They killed him. You know, and I can't say that, like, you know, every one of them is part of the agenda, but I'm saying when it's the white folks who go do that, they never end up killing them, and we never know what happens to them at the end of the day.
I think it's as simple as he's one of us.
Exactly.
You know, like, you know, he did what I wanted to do. You know?
Right.
Like, so, of course, I'm going to treat him with humanity because I would want to be treated with humanity if I did that to them. Like, we're all...
But that's inhumane and absolutely insane to think like that. It's crazy.
They are inhumane. People who behave that way are inhumane. They're mm-hmm. uncivilized mutts.
Right.
And let me go back to a statement you just made about us being our worst enemy. I've heard that many, many times from black people, especially online.
Right.
And you know, assuming that they were black.
They
were online. the reason why I disagree with that is because that is a tall statement mm-hmm. to say that we're our worst enemy. Mm-hmm. And we've been our worst enemy. We, black people, have never enslaved our entire population of people in any country. We didn't stomp unborn babies out of their mother's wombs. We didn't feed babies to alligators. We didn't take plows and snatch teeth out of the mouths of human beings who didn't want to work.
Right.
And so they decided that because I don't want to work, I'm not going to work for you anymore. I'd rather starve. We forced them to eat liquids. So we snatched their teeth, pulled their teeth out of their mouth.
Right.
We didn't bomb Tulsa, Oklahoma. We didn't raid Rosewood and burn it down to the ground.
Yeah,
We didn't implement Jim Crow or the Tuskegee experiment.
Right.
You know, we didn't create mass incarceration and welfare to purposely target black families and divide them. We didn't bring crack cocaine into the neighborhood and disseminated an entire population of people.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do any of those things. Those are major atrocities.
Yeah, yeah, that's facts,
yes,
though.
Yes,
that's facts.
Yes, we do have some uncivilized mutts in our race.
Right.
Yes, we do.
Right.
But that is a very small group of people when you look at our entire population. When you look, when you really think about our plight in America,
mm-hmm.
we've only been legally freed just over 160 years or so, 170 years.
Right.
That is a very short time when you think about the overall accomplishments of black people.
Right, right,
right.
When
you think about all of our accomplishments, let's not look at just the people who are the Beyoncés and the Jay-Zs.
Right.
It's what they try to get us to focus on.
Right.
The Willie D's and the Jason Mitchells.
Right, like, right.
They try to get us to focus on people who are in very special categories. Right.
Right.
We have produced thousands of doctors and lawyers, tens of thousands
absolutely.
Of doctors,
lawyers,
absolutely.
I mean, most of these inventors.
Educators,
yeah.
Inventors, entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
Just everyday working class people who, despite the odds,
mm-hmm.
put their children through school and kept them out of the long grips of Johnny Law.
Right.
You know, we have so many success stories. But what happens, I think, oftentimes, not I think, but I know, is that they use our worst as an example of who we are collectively.
Well, and they see, this use, is
hold
what
on,
I think.
Hold on, yeah. And they use their worst. I mean, they use our worst as an example of who we are collectively, and they use their best as an example of who they are collectively. Right. And oftentimes,
I mean, they'll even fabricate it. Look at white Jesus.
And I think oftentimes we get brainwashed by that psychological warfare that they're playing on us, when we get worn down so much, and we tend to say, just like a lot of people that aren't black go like, damn, what's wrong with the Negroes?
Right.
Damn, they can't get it together.
Right.
And we start saying, man, we can't get it together. We are, you know?
Right. Well, see, the way I look at it, right, is that, like you said, they've put these systems in place for us to fight each other because, like, even to say something as small as, we're the minority. When you ask yourself, for real, like, where really are we the minority, those numbers would change, right? Like, you ever been to Hawaii?
Many. I used to vacation there all the time.
So you heard of Haole Day before?
I haven't.
So Haoles is what they call white people, right? Okay. And on Haole Day, they just beat up all the white people. It's like a holiday. But everybody knows, like, it's all good. Like,
that goes on currently in Hawaii?
Yeah. Look it up. You can Google
it. Who is they? Hawaiians?
Everybody else that ain't white. They just beat the white people up.
What?
Yeah, it's a thing, right? So imagine.
On what days do they go out there?
I don't know. We got to Google it. Find Haole Day. I think it's H-O-W-L-E-Y. Haole.
Set me up a trip to go. No, I'm just messing with y'all, man. I ain't like that, bro. I ain't like that.
No, but it's,
I just hate the white people who hate me, man.
Right, right. I'm the same way. Like, I don't have no race.
I hate the one, and I hate the black people who hate me too. I hate anybody who hate me. You don't like me, I don't like you, man.
Right.
You rock with me, I rock with you.
Right. But I think, you know, these systems have been put in place to, like you said, brainwash us, right? And then they set it up to where, like, you know, like for every fourth grader that fails the LEAP test, they build a jail cell. You know what I'm saying? Like, they figuring out how to, again, make you a slave. They gonna put these systems in place. But being from such a violent city, you know, and what I see around me is, it's kind of crazy because I'm like, yo, I've never seen the police actually kill somebody, you know? Like, I know a lot of people who carry guns all the time, and they're not carrying guns for the white boys. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, right. Like, that's what I mean by times, like, we're our worst enemy because, like, we don't have no money, so it's like, oh, may the toughest guy win, or everybody want to be in charge. Or when we do decide to have a movement that we're pushing forward, we lead with violence a lot of the times. You know what I mean? And we're just so much smarter than that. And, like, we got to be in this world where we pivoting. You know what I mean? And we got to do that on a great level. Like, you know, you see some guys like 19 Keys who, you know, they getting huge groups of black people together and they talking about things that's sort of like solution-based. You know? They trying to make people think about it. But, like, that's all fine and dandy, but, like, what's the plan? You know, and I think that's what we got to start feeling like. What's the plan? What we going to do? What we going to do for each other? What situations we going to set up for each other? Because we still pressing these things to a lot of our kids and a lot of our families that, like, is still putting them up top and making it seem like white is right. And they doing this all over the world. You know what I mean? And you see so much chaos happening in these black communities. And I just think it's sad that, like, you know, it's somebody's job to wake up and go spin on the ops every morning. Like, what are you thinking about? You know what I mean? That's crazy to me. I can't take that land down.
I gotta acknowledge everything that you said just now as truth. However, those black people who do behave like uncivilized mutts are a microcosm of society.
Facts.
Right?
Facts.
Overall American society.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you live amongst black people who behave that way, and even when you look at New Orleans as a whole, most black people I know from New Orleans are law-abiding, hardworking citizens.
Facts.
It is that small
in the projects here or the projects there or the projects there is where all the bullshit comes from. But they are not the majority of black people in New Orleans.
Facts.
You know?
Facts.
So it's easy if you come from that to see, and that's all you see, to just say, okay, maybe that's what it is. But I was able to get outside of Fifth Ward, and I saw a lot of that too, but I was able to get outside of Fifth Ward early on.
Right.
And I saw black people living differently. I saw people behaving differently. I was able to move overseas to Azerbaijan. And in that country at the time, I lived in Baku.
Okay.
Baku is similar to Houston in numbers and population, about 4 million people at the time that I lived there. Houston had about 4 million people. The difference? Baku experienced about one murder a month, and typically it was domestic, husband-wife type of situation.
Right.
In Houston, comparably, Houston was averaging about 15 murders a week at that time. Now, I also saw lines of men on the streets in suits. And these suits were like not really in good condition, but they were on the streets early in the morning, and they waiting on people to pick them up. You know, like in Houston and in some other parts, and even in Dallas, you see Mexicans out at gas stations and Home Depot and all this kind of stuff, waiting on some jobs. Well, this is how these guys would do. But it would be hundreds and hundreds and rows of guys. I mean, sometimes, like, for a solid mile, just straight on both sides of the street. And some people were still sleeping on dirt floors at the time. Okay? Some people, right? And I'm comparing it to the U.S., and I'm going like, well, they're poor. They're really, really poor.
Right.
Why aren't they killing each other? Why aren't they robbing? Because we often say, well, we killing each other, and we hurting, and we fighting, and we robbing because we ain't got nothing.
Right.
Well, they ain't got nothing either. They really ain't got nothing.
Right.
And they're not robbing. They're not killing. And what I surmise is how the government communicates with its people. Leadership starts at the top.
Yes.
And these people have put a premium on life. They put a premium on family. They put a premium on community.
Yeah.
We don't. I was with my family on our way home, and we saw a fight. We looked off to the left. I saw this, a fight. It was like old women, children, men beating up this one guy. They were whooping his ass. They were serving him. Boy, they were serving him all kinds of pieces, bro. The dudes was punching him, kicking him. Little kids was kicking him. Old lady, a couple old ladies had broomstick, and they were hitting him in slow motion with the broomstick. So I turned to the driver, and I asked my driver, I said, say, man, what's going on? He said, I don't know, I'll find out. So he dropped us off, and he went back to see what was up.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back, and he said, yeah, that guy beat up his girlfriend. And so they beat him up.
Yeah.
The whole neighborhood whooped his ass. They don't play that. In Houston, in America, we see some mind your own business.
Right.
Mind your own business.
Right.
You see?
Right.
And that's why our women and children are unsafe.
Right, because we're not living off principle.
That's why our boys are walking around at 13 years old, 10 years old, with guns in their waistband.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people that are in this country and the people even in their neighborhoods, instead of the men in the neighborhoods protecting the neighborhood and keeping them safe, they look at the boys as competition.
Right.
You know, they're trying to holler at you. 15 years old, you got a grown man, 20-something, 30-something years old, trying to get at the same girl you trying to get at.
Right.
So they see you as competition. And in many cases, the women see the girls, the younger girls, as competition.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But I surmise that the reason, the fundamental reason is values, brother.
Yeah.
It comes down to values. At one point, I was a source of a lot of the pain in my community, you know? I was very violent. And so I contributed to some of that, right?
Right.
It wasn't until I learned to love myself that I learned to love other people, and I said, you know what, that ain't right, and I started actually taking up for people. And I became a protector.
Yeah.
You know, instead of an agitator.
Yeah.
You know, instead of a provocateur, I became a protector. And once I did that, I decided ain't nobody coming in this neighborhood and bullying nobody. Ain't nobody pushing nobody around. You ain't coming to beat up nobody
right.
in this neighborhood.
Right.
And once I put my foot down, the other guys around me did the same thing, and it was peace.
Right.
And so the men, it really starts with the men. They got to step up because the men are the ones who are, and the boys are really the ones who are doing all the killing. So
right.
everybody like to talk about leadership. I'm a leader. I'm a man. I'm this, whatever.
Right. But you're not really, living that way.
You're not living that way. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I totally get it. And see, that's why me and everybody around us, we realize how much influence film and television has on a lot of this. Music, all of that. It has a huge influence. Like, look at, you know, what's going on with Ja Morant. You can't. I mean, he's a young guy, 23 years old, but you can't tell me that that influence ain't coming from TV and film and the music and 'cause you're not living that way. Mm. It's just, but it's the culture putting so much pressure on people that the first thing you do when you get money is try to go get some hoes and try to do this. And the hoes like, I want a real nigga. I want a nigga who do this and do that and do this and do that. And you like, well, shit, nigga, G Herbo out the hood. You know what I'm saying? So I won't be flying where Pooh Shiesty mask too. But that ain't your life though. You know what I mean? Because anybody who knows that life for real ain't got nothing. They're not glorifying it at all. They really just rapping about it so they can get some money and never got to go back, yeah. You know? So I created a foundation called Dream Seeker that ultimately is a film education platform that's allowing people to, you know, we training people in every department behind the camera. They can come on set, get trained, work for union hours, and pretty much gearing them to work anywhere in the world. We already got this projected to be a global situation because a thing that's not happening is that we don't have no direct contact with Africa for real. They not teaching Africans about slavery, so they looking at us, we looking at them. It ain't no unity in none of this. You know what I mean? And then when they do show us Africa, it's motherfuckers with pot bellies and, you know what I mean? Everybody starving, flies in their eyes, they ain't got no shoes on their feet, whatever it may be, and they ain't gonna tell you, oh, some of these people is convoying in race. You know, some of these people got, you know, so much money that it's crazy. It's all kind of billionaires and all kind of people that we never even heard of. And they don't want to shed light on that because it'll start to give us this different picture of ourselves. You know what I mean? And this, you know, this go way back. Like, they've been trying to break our minds since white Jesus, you know. But like, I think through all this chaos, like you said, where does the leadership start? So I know, okay, I got my little piece, film and television. All right, let's do it like this. And we can make movies about whatever we want to make the movies about, but the education process and the jobs that we give people and all of these different things, I believe will change something. And I'm like, I might not even live to see that. But if this go all the way around the world, I know for sure I ain't going to leave it like I came. And I think if we have that mindset to not leave the world the same way we found it, and we starting with ourselves, it's gonna be a beautiful place. You know what I mean? Because it ain't about us being divided. Like, I don't want to live in a world with just black folks. You know what I mean? I don't even want to live my life like that. So, you know, like you said, like, when we get to the point where we could just start loving on ourselves a little bit more, you know, you can love on your kids better, you can love on your family a little bit better, you can love what you do, you know. Because we all wired to love. And, you know, on the other end of that is the hate. That's what, you know, and people end up hating because they want to be loved. You know what I'm saying? So it's interesting, man. But I think that I'm very optimistic about the situation, to say the least. You know, because I feel like if you close to me, I know I could have a little love for you at least. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it just have to start there. You know, I hope I'm radiant, and I hope that people, like, when they see me, they see God in me. They like, damn, that's what's up. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, a lot of us ain't got no guidance, but it take a village, you know? It take people like yourself for me to get around people and be like, you know what? This is a good thing, you know? Because I feel like it's such a block between young people and the older generation. You know, like, I was talking to you about my grandfather. Him and I used to get into it a lot because he used to always want to pay his bills in the envelope that it come in and fill out the paper and all. I'm like, you know, it's the 20th century. Like, you don't have to do it this way no more. Like, why do you want to do it like this? He always used to be peeking over my shoulder. I'm like, you know, and I would get agitated by it. Because I'm like, damn, I'm trying to do something else. You want me to come fill these bills out? But I didn't know until maybe 6 or 7 years ago that the only thing that my grandfather knows how to write is his name. And he could write it in cursive, so he hella proud of it. But that's all he know how to write. So he was always very impressed with my penmanship. And you know what I mean? The fruit of his labor. Look how it's turning out. Damn, look what we doing. And it would agitate me because I'm like, you know, but it was the block. And he had so much pride that he was afraid to tell me, like, oh, I can't write this. This is why I need you to do it. Like, you know, so I feel like we need to listen to each other, young generation, old generation, whatever it may be, you know. And like you said, like, we've all had our slip-ups, you know, and been part of the bullshit in our communities, you know. So we got to step up and start doing something great, you know what I mean, and show people that you can change and that we can change this world if we change ourselves.
Yeah.
That was profound.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And you know, the trip part about it is that a lot of the answers are in those characters that you've played. I'm telling you, man.
Thank you.
You have done a remarkable job at picking good characters.
Thank you.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
AT&T Connects, an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Going back to the Eazy-E movie. I mean, the Eazy-E movie.
Straight out of Compton.
The NWA movie, Straight Out of Compton, and where you played Eazy. When they told you that, did you have to take any type of special courses or whatever to find out, you know, how an AIDS patient would respond to treatment or to the news that they had gotten AIDS? Did you have to go around any type of clinics or anything like that?
No. I just thought of it like, because I had an uncle that died from AIDS, right? And I got my own conspiracy thoughts on that too, because I ain't gonna lie, he was healthy as an ox, but he was a gay man, right? And when everybody was getting tested and people was finding out and all of this kind of stuff, like, the whole family suggested that he go get tested because they knew he was gay. Lo and behold, he got AIDS. 4 months later, he dies. But he paid like $80,000 or something crazy number for the medicine. So, you know, it was like, to me, it came through and just swept a lot of people. But I personally feel like it came from the medicine, right? So aside from that, I'm looking at Eazy's situation. Like, he went to the hospital and never left. You know what I'm saying? Like, he went and they never leave. So the shock to him was more like, no, I ain't gay. What you mean I got AIDS? Like, that's for gay people, because that's what the media is saying. And then they're like, no, well, your T-cell count is 13, sir. You know, you got a few days. You about to get out of here. That whole, like, because, I mean, we done survived shootouts, we done survived this and that, survived the police, all of that, and I'm about to die from a sickness? Are you kidding me? Like, I know his heart was broke. You know what I mean? Because he never, ever, I don't think, wanted the best for Cube, he wanted the best for Dre, he wanted the best for Yella, Ren, even Jerry Heller. He wanted the best for people. Like, he had a good heart about himself. He gave each of his kids $20,000 a month. You know, he was taking care of what he had to take care
racks
of.
He gave each one of his kids 20 racks a month.
20 bands a
Why
month.
Why he didn't give Cube that money Cube was asking about? Cube wanted some money, man.
Well, you know.
Cube had wrote a lot of that music, man. Cube wanted that money.
Well, you know, but to be honest, I think Eazy was also afraid to, I mean, he know that there was things that Jerry could do that he couldn't. You know, like, when they went to go visit the White House, they made us take that out the movie. It was in the original script. They made us take that out the movie. And it wasn't even, that's a simple shot to say, hey, you know, we just got off the airplane or whatever, and they just simply turned us back around and said, no, get y'all ass back on there. That's all they needed to put in the movie to let us know that it happened, you know? But it was like, nah,
you took it out.
I believe Universal wanted us to take it out. But F. Gary Gray, he's so smart, you know, that like at the end of the film, that's why Cube says to Easy, how you go from selling rocks in the dope house to eating dinner with the president in the White House. And, you know, Easy responds by saying, they still trying to figure that out. Because that was the truth. All they knew was Eric Lynn Wright donated X amount of dollars to the state of California. He should be a Republican. They didn't think he was going to show up and be the same nigga from Fuck the Police. They was like, hell no. They turned him around. You know what I mean? But, yeah, that's the truth. And they didn't want to see it. Like, they didn't want us to be that powerful.
Yeah.
You know? Like, when you look at it, they knocked off him, Biggie, and Pac in a very short amount of time. If you go from the first death to the last, it's like, I don't even think it's 2 full years.
Who was in office when Eazy-E went to the White House?
Was it Reagan? I don't remember. Who was it?
See, I don't even think Eazy went to the White House.
It was the presidential luncheon that they were supposed to be showing up at.
So whatever it was.
It might have been Big Bush. Might have been.
Whatever he went to, was supposed to go to, I think Easy went there like just to give him a big middle finger. Like, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That's what it was always about.
Yeah, it was not
he knew he was going to get $1 million worth of free press. And he wasn't trying to go there to get down.
Laughing like, I can just see Easy reading that letter. Like, when he got the letter, I can just say, yeah, you know what?
They done fucked up.
And somebody probably, like one of the secretaries or something probably read the letter and say they want you to, and he was like, what? Well, what you going to do? I'm going.
Right. I'm headed. You know, because they probably had no idea who Eric Lynn Wright was. They definitely didn't put that together and think it was Eazy-E.
You know, Eric, you were a very smart guy, right? But, man, I think you overplayed your hand by not paying Cube and Dre. I think you overplayed your hand.
He definitely did that bad.
You got your most prolific writer in the group, and you got your beat maker. Mm-hmm. You got your guy who's making the music. You got to take care of those guys. You got to make them happy. They got to be happy.
Absolutely.
It didn't seem like that they were asking for anything unreasonable.
No. I mean, I think at the end of the day, he was so stuck on what Jerry Heller was telling him and trusting that situation so much that between everything that's going on in his life, he was just so blinded to it. I think he, after a while, just put on blinders and was like, Jerry got it. I don't want to talk to y'all about no money because, I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, by that time, he was on a rapid downfall. You know what I mean? Like, Jerry really got all of their ass. You know what I mean? Like, Easy wasn't exempt from the situation. Like, he definitely lost money, too. And I think if he would have just pay more attention to the situation in its entirety, you know, because he really didn't believe that they couldn't do it without Jerry. And Dre was preaching that to him the whole time, you know, but, I mean, we see where Dre at now, billionaire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We see where Cube at now, like, leading it, you know what I mean? So it's, I don't know, man, It was sad to watch, but, you know, I am glad that I got to humanize him in a way that didn't tarnish the legacy at all.
Oh, brother, you killed that role.
Thank you.
You was made for that role.
Thank you.
You killed it. I mean, not talking about knocking it out the park. You set a distance record with that motherfucker. Shit. Man. I'm glad I wasn't out there trying to audition. I'd be like,
yeah,
man,
the auditions
was
crazy.
Man, stop playing, man. Yeah. Stop playing. If they would have called me back, I'm like, man, you playing? That's Jason Rowe, bro. I mean, you knocked that thing out the park.
Yeah.
Is that any role that they could ask of you that you would not play? You absolutely would just say, no, I'm not playing that type of character.
I'm not homophobic at all. Don't have no homophobic bones in my body. But I just, I don't want to play any of those roles. None of
Fair
that.
Fair enough.
You know, I mean, I feel like they got gay people out here that act. They got transgenders out here that act. And they could portray those stories very well, you know, and they fit in that box very well. So, you know, I could sort of leave that for them. That and maybe like, I'm not too big on the womanizers either. I don't really want to play that. You know, maybe a hot boy, but like as far as like on some Ike Turner type shit, like, nah. You know what I mean? Like they still got people who be looking at Blair Underwood like, I don't like his ass. But he, you know, he probably don't beat his wife at home, but people just look at it like, you know what I mean? Lawrence Fishburne had to shake that. You know what I'm saying? Because for a long time, people just looking at him like, I don't like his motherfucking ass, you know? So it's just like when you see Hannibal. Like when I first met Anthony Hopkins in real life, that was the first time I ever froze when I was like meeting a star. Because I always value myself enough to like, you know, you got some people, you meet them and you're like, damn, I just been a huge fan my whole life or whatever. But as far as like being struck where you do some stupid shit, like that only happened to me when I met him and the dude who played Candyman. And they don't even know about it because I ain't speak to him. I feel like the dude who played Candyman fucked up my whole childhood. Like, he don't even know. Like, you know, but I seen him and stopped. Like, you know, and I kind of let them go their own way because I'm like, damn. But, you know, it's powerful being an actor. You know what I'm saying? You never know how you affecting people's lives. So, you know, they got a couple things that I wouldn't like to do. But I personally feel like, you know, because I had all of these tattoos before I started acting. So in my mind, I always thought I was going to get pigeonholed, you know, or be typecast as the guy with the tattoos, Stug number 3 and shit, right? So I always would press this issue that I needed to show different faces of Jason Mitchell every time. I needed to do something completely different. Like, they called me to be Eazy-E in every other movie that had a glimpse of Eazy-E in it. Like, bro, no. You know what I mean? I'm not doing that no more. I play Eazy, that's fine. Like, you're not gonna get me to be Eazy in 9 more movies. Like, we could do this as a series and, you know, we can keep going. And then what? You know what I mean? People be like, when Straight Outta Compton 2 come out? Nigga, hopefully never. I died in the first one. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? Yeah, you know, so I never wanted to let that be the thing that held me back. You know what I mean? Because I definitely don't look at none of my tattoos as a mistake. I don't feel like I would take it back. I feel like it's part of my individuality and who I am as a person. You know, so it's good to know that it ain't holding me back. But it's always kind of like in the back of my mind. Like, can you really do that? Show me. You know? And I'm always in this battle with myself. Like, I feel like it's just me against me. Yeah. You know, if you stand in front of the goal, I'm going to dunk on your ass. I'm definitely the LeBron of this shit. I feel like they got actors out here that had opportunities to work with me and don't because they know I'm going to go up on their ass. You know what I mean? It just is what it is. Like, and I love this craft. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying? But, like, it's just like, you know, you see LeBron and Steph Curry got this love for each other, you know? But, like, on the court, ain't no love. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to disrespect you or do nothing like that, but I'm here to win. And that's how I feel when it comes to my craft. Like, I'm here to win. You stand in front of the goal, prepare to get dunked on, Vince Carter style, going with my arm and all of that in the rim. You know what I mean? I'm going to highlight post to your ass.
I believe you.
I'm ready for it.
Man, what's your relationship like with Lena Waithe?
Me and Lena are cool. We, like, when I first met Lena, I met her at a SAG event, and they had a step and repeat, right? And she had on, like, this fly-ass suit, and I actually asked to take a picture with her because I just thought she was fly as hell. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know who she was. And she was like, you know, I'm a writer. You know, I've done a couple of things, but, like, I really want to work with you one day. And I was like, shit, let's touch and agree on it right now. Like, all my friends that tell you, like, I pray in a minute. Like, I'm all about it, you know? So we literally stopped on the step and repeat and pray, you know? And then I ended up getting this offer come in saying, hey, yeah, for the shot. And I was just like, damn, we really spoke that shit into existence. So by us having that, that introduction and, you know, by us adding God into the mix early on, I don't feel like nothing could really break that. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, when the whole little situation happened and shit kind of came rolling down on me or whatever, I understood why she got out the way. Because you got the whole brand to protect. You got the whole show to protect. You know what I'm saying? I took a bullet and it was what it was.
Did she support you silently? I mean, well, let me put it like this. Did she support you privately?
Absolutely.
She did?
Absolutely. Okay. But, you know, to be honest, I wasn't really trying to hear that shit at the time. Like, you know, because I was like, why would you just flash out and be like, oh, I got to stand with the woman? Like, you don't even know what the fuck happened yet. You know what I'm saying?
So she actually did that?
I mean, I think she did. I think at one point in time, she called the Breakfast Club and was like, I'll never work with Jason Mitchell again. But then she retracted those words when she found out that the situation wasn't what she thought it was. But I just think that's some bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as much as you know somebody, you know, I feel like people who really know me, when they hear shit in the media, they'll be like, that's not really him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like she was one of the people who could have spoke up and said something that could have changed the situation. But yeah, exactly. But I also realized that, you know, if she did stand behind me and I did do some bullshit, it could have been bad for both of us. You know what I mean? I understand that too. So, you know, that's, I don't judge nobody for their situation. You know what I mean? And you never know what people are going to do under pressure. I mean, niggas snitch every day. You know what I'm saying? So I don't be judging people. I really don't.
I tell you this, bro. One of the quickest ways to find out who for you is to go through some heavy shit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Go through something, bro.
For sure.
Go through something. And I'm going to tell you, you know, like when I had my situation with the feds, bro, it was one of them situations that if you could talk to God and you'd be like, say, God, no, you ain't got to do all that. God was like, no, I'm going to sit you down for a while, bro. You're kind of moving a little bit too fast.
Right.
I would have been like, no, you ain't really got to, man. I'm talking to you right now. I'm telling
right.
you, I ain't going to do it no more.
I got you.
I'm telling you, no, God, I'm going to sit you down for a minute. But I'm going to tell you something, bro. It was a blessing in disguise. It's
yes.
not something I would have wished for, but it was a blessing in disguise because when I say them niggas was dropping like flies all around me, when
right.
I say they was scatting,
right.
and it tightened my circle, it strengthened it. My circle became so strong, only the real was around me, and it stood out clearly. Including, when I say the real, I mean even the women in my circle. The women got tight, super tight. The women in my circle... Shit, I go to war any day. I pick them over some of these dudes out here any day, cause they soldiers. I mean, they like all the way. Like, oh, yeah, they crying, they going crazy. Hey, well,
right.
we gotta do something. They want the twin power activate. Like, we gonna make.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They
right.
was like that. They were like that.
No, I respect that so much.
And you wanna know, it's not something that you wish, but if you gotta go through something, if you're going through it, that's when you're going to really, really know, bro.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, because, you know, we was just talking about Jaquavis. Like, listen, he helped me really start to look at myself for who I was. Because I've always been me. You understand? I'm with myself every day. I'm not going home and saying, nigga, you a superstar. Nigga, you this, you that. I'm just Jason.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm just Jason, bro. And everybody know I come with a very humble energy. I got a humble spirit. And just because I fucked around and did something great, I don't think that makes me no better than the next person, right? So it was hard for me to really start looking at it. He was like, bro, when the last time you seen somebody on the street? And they said, when you see Showtime, tell them we love, we appreciate them for putting you on that show. Anybody ever stopped you and said, hey, man, tell Universal that we appreciate them for letting you play Eazy-E? And you're like, nah, nigga, they love you. Invest in yourself. You ain't doing shit but making somebody else rich. Even if you is getting a little bag, it could be a whole different type of bag if you say, fuck it, I'm gonna bet on me. You know what I mean? But when I did that, a lot of people, because the handout stopped. Because a lot of motherfuckers can call me and give me a sad story. Say, brother, look, man, I'm going through. You know, I'll shoot you something. Mm-hmm. You come stay at the crib. You know, a lot of motherfuckers, they know. They know I ain't lying. They know. I done held so many people down. But as soon as I say, I can't do that. Well, I was going through some shit. You know, motherfuckers, the phone stopped ringing as much. You dig what I'm saying? And I'm talking about my circle done went to a dot. Family members done dropped out of it and everything. And it just is what it is. Because I feel like, you know, if I ain't got nothing else, I got God. And God is going to direct me to the right people at all times. And the people who really, really love me going to be 100% down with that walk that I'm on. Period. And that's just it. That's the short and long of it. It ain't no miraculous, glamorous story. No, either you going to love me and you going to be here through the entire thing, or it's going to be over. You know what I mean? Jamie Foxx, you know, blessings to him. You know what I mean? Because he was one of them people. Like, I went through some shit. He was like, man, come to the house. Let me talk to you. Sit you down and talk to you. You know? Really shoot some shit in your ear. If you ever really need something, brother, I got you. You know? They got very few people in the world who like that, dog. Like, when things was going great, I'm talking about it wasn't a movie star in the business that didn't want to work with me or that I couldn't call personally. I could literally call my agent and be like, I need such and such number. They texting it to me in the next 5 minutes. And they like, shh. I remember I was in Vietnam. Russell Simmons called my phone. They was like, can you hold for Russell Simmons? I was like, I ain't never had nobody call my phone and put me on hold immediately. You know what I mean? But this was the type of shit that was happening. You think when I went through the bullshit, these people was calling my phone? Hell no. Yeah. You know, but now I just feel different because I'm like, you know what? If nothing else, I know I got a direct pipeline to the fans. And, you know, acting is my happy place. So if I can make movies to the day I die, that's what I'm going to do. And if the fans continue to watch my shit, that's going to be great. But I know for a fact, ain't nobody else got to give me another opportunity in the world. Don't get me wrong. I would love it. I would love to be in a Marvel movie. I would love to be a superhero. But if them opportunities never roll back around, my bag's still going to look the same as theirs.
I believe that, bro.
You know?
I believe that.
Because, so I'm all right.
You know, that's why I am. See, my bounce back, you know, boy, my bounce back is very similar, bro. Like, I just got one of those type of mentalities, like, I'm going to make it no matter what. So even if I got to do it all by myself, all alone, right, everybody dropped off. But right, it's beautiful to have some support, yeah, even if it's a small circle. In fact, I actually prefer my smaller circle anyway, because that's less birthday parties I got to go through. Less gifts I got to buy.
You ain't lying.
That, you know, that's less anniversaries I got to attend.
Right.
You know, that's less people I got to talk to.
Right.
That's taking up my time. You know, like, hey, man, you know, like, everything that I do, man, it's all quality. Like, I'm dealing with quality people.
Yeah.
So, super tight circle, quality people.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that. So, blessing in disguise, man, and you know how it go, bro. What don't kill us make us stronger.
Facts. And a lot of times, like you said, we don't be wanting to hear that. You know, you be like, God, I'm gonna look.
Yeah.
You got me. Like, you're like, yeah, I got you, but you're gonna have to sit this one out. Right. You know, and I feel like so blessed that I got to get close enough to the fire to really know that it was hot, but not really get burned.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like a lot of times, you know, when you get to celebrity status, you gotta make sure that you're not self-inflicting wounds, you know? And for whatever God has, you know, set for me to do, because it's far from over, you know what I mean? I'm still a very young guy, and I feel like, you know, it's a lot that's gonna be on my path. But one thing I can't do is put myself in the line of fire or self-inflict pain. I can't do that. If I do that, I'm going to lose off the rip. So he put that in front of my face like, okay, this is what will happen if you do some dumb shit. And in the process of that, all of these people who claiming they're your friends and all of this shit, look, we're going to wipe all of that situation out. And to make it even better for you to feel secure, you're going to go home with all of their secrets. So nobody got to feel no kind of way about nothing. Because I'm telling you, every time I get in front of a fucking microphone, I guarantee you they got people who cringe. Like, oh, God, I hope this nigga don't bring this up. And I hope he don't say this. And I hope he don't say that. But nah, I don't care. I don't care that you done, that you didn't stick up for me. I don't give a fuck about that. I'm just happy that you out the way and that, that's not going to affect my life in no negative ways. You know what I mean? Because we could potentially be in a situation where this could really fuck me up. You know what I mean? Look at Young Thug. All these niggas never turned on the gang. I would never snitch. La, la, la. Soon as they get in there, it was him. DeAndre did it, Your Honor. You know what I mean? They doing it to each other and it's crazy. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about instantly. So for me, I just feel like I'm just so happy that like the people that's around me love me as much as I love them. You know, if anything would have happened to me, I feel safe with them being around my daughters. And, you know, I can't ask for much more, you know, more life.
Yeah, them boys over there in that Young Thug trial, pointing like the Jackson 5.
Oh, God. Oh, God. They pointing at everybody, brother. It's fucked up, man. I'm so sad for that dude, bro, because to be honest, man, like, you know, I mean, I can't speak on their business. I don't really know what really be going on, but I've always seen them be all about their business. That's what their whole world is engulfed with. Rap music. You know what I'm saying? They either on tour or in the studio. They trying to do some shit with themselves. So, you know, it's fucked up, man, to see these RICO cases and these conspiracy shits that be happening, you know, just tearing down these things that get built, you know, when half of it don't even be like that. It'd be a bunch of handshakes and daps and shit these niggas made up, and you know what I mean? And then you got somebody fucking off in the background who ruined it for everybody, and it's just, it's really sad to watch, man. It's really sad to watch.
Let that be a lesson, boys and girls. You resemble who you assemble. Real talk.
Absolutely.
Jason Mitchell, you one of the realest, bro. This has been a, this is what we would call on Halloween a treat.
I heard that.
This has been a treat, man.
I heard that. I appreciate
you. Thank you for coming on the podcast. And is there anything that you want to leave with the audience before we take off?
First and foremost, everything is both. June 2nd, Apple TV. If you ain't got Apple TV, you might be able to watch it on Amazon Prime, but you do got to go check that out. Me and Jaquavis Coleman, we produced that. Bartime Fitzpatrick is in it. We found, because we like to give opportunities, you know what I mean? So we got some sensations that you're going to see in this movie that you have not seen yet. And it's just going to be a lovely, lovely, lovely treat for y'all. So I want y'all to check that out. And for those who do want to be in the film business, go to idreamseek.org and sign up. And we're going to send you all the information you need to find out how we could get you in this business, you know? So not only are we making movies, but we're giving opportunities, you know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
Oh, yes and yes.
Yeah, speaking
it.
Of opportunities, let me put Jaquavis on the spot right now.
Okay.
Jaquavis Coleman is in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, he's hiding in the background.
The family, I'm going to let y'all know right now, I'm going to tell the whole world, Jaquavis already said the very next movie that he do, y'all going to see me in it. Now, that's what he said. Let's see what happens. No more talk. Yeah, you
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and in the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.